Good morning, everybody out there. Thank you for tuning in. This is Dr. Andrew Dyer, and I am your host for the week. Well, I'm your host for the next hour, let's say that. On today's program, entitled Natural Relief and Smart Medicine, Seasonal Allergies, Thyroid Dysfunction, and Food and Nutritional Supplements as Support. So hello and welcome back to the show. I'm so glad you're out there listening. Maybe you're driving around in the Miami Valley this morning and you've got your car radio tuned to WHIO, or perhaps you're listening right through the website on WHIO.com. If you don't get a chance to listen to today's program in its entirety, it'll be posted later on in the next couple days on WHIO's website and on our website as well at take2healthcare.com. I am your guest host for today. And my job, my mission, my goal is to give you something to consider about your health. And today I think I'm going to give you quite a few things to consider about your health. But in our talk today, we're going to be looking at three things that affect a lot of people, but they often get misunderstood or lumped together. And those are seasonal allergies. Okay, it's that time of year in the Miami Valley. Spring is breaking, grass is growing, trees are in bloom and bud, and some people are having trouble with coughing, sneezing, itchy throat. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about thyroid dysfunction and the role that diet, vitamins, and natural support strategies play in both the treatment and prevention of these issues. So a lot of people are walking around feeling tired, foggy, puffy, irritable, congested, or just not really like themselves. And they may be assuming that it's the result of stress, they're getting older, not sleeping well, maybe they have some hormone imbalances, or they think they do, or that they just need to quote unquote eat cleaner. But sometimes the problem's a little bit more specific than that. Sometimes it's pollen and allergic inflammation. Pollen, maybe that's a new word. I just made a new word up. Pollen and allergic inflammation. Sometimes it's a thyroid issue, and sometimes it's a combination of both. So on today's program, we're going to help sort through what each condition is, what the overlap looks like, and what natural options really make sense, where nutrition can come in and be a really helping hand, and where people need to be careful not to confuse all these terms together. And those are natural with safe or effective. Now, we have a little tagline around our office. We have a couple of them, but one here that I pulled up on our website says, sometimes even serious problems have simple, safe, and natural solutions. Progress on our program should be seen within 2 weeks or at the most 2 months. So keep that in mind. Not every natural supplement is created equally, and it's really truly the testing that helps us cut through and figure out what each individual person needs, because one person's allergic response when they walk out on their front porch in the morning may be very different to what's driving another person crazy. And as always, this episode is absolutely for your education, not meant to be a substitute for diagnosis or even personal medical advice. But my goal is that by the end of our conversation today, you'll have a much clearer sense of what to watch for, what questions to ask of yourself, your family, maybe your physician, or if your physician can't give you the answers that you're looking for and need to help your body get better, maybe you need a whole new physician team altogether. And that's where we might come in and be able to lend a hand at Take Two Healthcare. We are a natural healthcare clinic. We're located in Centerville, Ohio, right on State Route 48 in between Whip and Ron Roads in the Royal Swiss Village, just one or two shopping centers up from the Dorothy Lane Market down there in Washington Township. That's where you can find us. You can find us on the web at take, T-A-K-E, the number 2, and then the word healthcare.com. So Take 2 means take 2 weeks to try a safe, natural option. That's how the name of our clinic came to be. If you need to get a hold of us via phone, our number at the office is 937-433-3241. If you need to get a hold of me here at the studio and ask a question on today's broadcast, we have a new phone number. And that new phone number here at the studio is area code 937-957-1290. Now, let's dive right in. Let's talk about seasonal allergies here to kick things off. What they are and why they hit so hard. You've heard it said, I'm sure, if you lived here long enough in the Miami Valley, people like to substitute out the name of the Miami Valley and they call it Sinus Valley. Because we are kind of down in a little bowl of sorts, and all of our air kind of seems to collect above us, doesn't really exchange rapidly. Well, not in the last 2 days. It's been rather windy, so that's been good, moving stuff out, but also moving other new introductions in the air right into our breathing tunnel, if you will. So how can we help that? Seasonal allergies are also known as allergic rhinitis or even hay fever. And they're triggered when your immune system reacts to things like tree pollen, the pollens in the grasses, and even pollens in the weeds. So if you spent any time out there in your yard this week, maybe you're getting the beds prepped or you're mowing the grass or you're digging holes, you're probably coming into contact with some of these air particles. So those particles get into your nose, your throat, and your eyes, and then the body tends to treat them like the threat that they are. That can lead to the sneezing, the runny noses, the itchy eyes, congestion, post-nasal drip, throat irritation, and even coughing. And for a lot of people, it's not just a little sniffle, but allergies can severely disrupt our sleep, our concentration, our mood, our workouts, and even our day-to-day energy. I know I go to meet with a collection of business owners every Wednesday morning, and when some of these folks stand up to address our room, I can hear it in their voices. And certainly all of us go through periods of time where we're sleeping better, we're taking really good care of ourselves, eating properly, taking our supplements, drinking good clean water, all the things that we talk about on this program. But I am always shocked by how many people in that room, when they stand up, just sound like they've got an absolute nose full of junk. And this is kind of all year long. I've been a part of this group now for just coming up on a year, and I can hear it in their noses and throats almost every single week. And I know some of them are dealing with sleep interruptions at night. They've got young kids at home, and maybe they're not resting as well as they could or should. But I also think that when busy solo business owners get to that point of each week, they don't always prioritize the health of their own systems because they're giving so much of their own energy to keep their businesses running, to create new client contacts and videos and posts and all the things that you have to do to run a successful company. They're doing so much of that each week that I think their own health kind of falls to the back burner. And that's where hopefully I can give them some food for thought on what to do to stay healthy. And it's going to be more complex than just rattling off the name of a few vitamins that you could take each week. Although for the vast majority of people, I think I have it kind of consolidated down to three or four things that might really work. And we'll get into that as we move along. But what's also important to note is with these allergies, they don't exist in a vacuum. So the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology notes that beyond pollen itself, people can be worsened by irritants like smoke, strong fragrances coming off their body or somebody near them, cleaning products, car exhaust, air pollution, even sudden temperature changes like what we've seen happen this week. We had days in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and on up will be 80 tomorrow. So those sudden temperature changes or even going out and exercising can aggravate some of these nasal symptoms in the people that we're talking about that have these seasonal allergies. So if you've ever thought, why am I still feeling miserable even when I'm inside? Part of the answer may be that your whole environment is contributing to that chronic inflammatory state going on in your body. And one really helpful way to think about seasonal allergies is this. Your immune system's reacting to pollen, but your environment is shaping how intense that reaction feels. The total load matters. So pollen load, irritant load, indoor air quality, sleep quality, stress, and the existing inflammation that's already present all have an influence on the outcome of how hard allergy season hits you. Now, I told you before I wasn't going to rattle off a bunch of supplements, but I am going to give you something to think about. Vitamin C has some excellent properties that could really help not only keep your immune system function strong, even through the summer months as we get towards spring and summer now. It's not just a winter use vitamin only, but vitamin C has excellent properties across the board for immune support. Something to consider using. And you're going to need far more than just what's found in a few slices of orange. I was having a couple of great discussions yesterday. My wife and I had a small gathering at the house to watch my favorite golf tournament on TV, the Masters. And one of my friends said, well, I'm just going to count on eating oranges for my vitamin C load. And I said, well, my good friend Jerry, that's not going to take you very far. Because in an average orange, there exists around 50 to 60 milligrams of vitamin C. Depends on the size of the orange, growing conditions, what kind of quality that fruit's in when we eat it. In an average tablet at our office, we can give 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in one tablet. So you might have to eat upwards of 100 oranges per day just to get what you can find in one tablet of vitamin C. Now, most adult patients are going to benefit from a dosage on vitamin C between 2 and 4,000 milligrams. Some will need far more. Some will need a little bit less. I typically take around 3,000 milligrams myself each day. And that's all through summer, winter, every season of the year, because it helps keep my immune system functioning strong so that I don't go down and have to miss work or these programs. I've been working at Take-Two Healthcare for 20 years. And in those 20 years, I've missed exactly 2 days due to sickness in that entire two-decade run at the office. Both times was due to food poisoning. I was actually getting so sick in the bathroom at work that I had to leave and go home in the afternoon. So I was there in the morning both times, and I missed the afternoon. But right away the next morning, I was back in the office. So this is not about me, but it's about using some of these strategies to keep yourself healthy. Now, what about natural allergy prevention that actually works? Let's talk about some practical natural support for these allergies. This is where I think people often get distracted by the trendy remedies and overlook the basics that can actually make a difference. If your body's reacting to the pollens and grass dust and dander floating through the air out there, both in your external and internal environments, one of the most natural and effective things you can do is simply help to try to reduce your exposure. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean staying indoors. They do mention that in the article, but one good thing that I like to use is after you spent a long day outside working in your garden or on your grass, make sure you take a rinse off shower before you go to bed so you can get all that stuff out of your hair, off the skin, off the hair maybe of your arms and legs if you've been wearing shorts and a t-shirt all day. Getting that all rinsed off can be helpful so that you're not breathing it all night long. There's also HEPA air purifiers that can be run in your bedroom. You close the door to your bedroom when you're not in there throughout the day, and at night you keep it closed or open it up. But if you're running that HEPA air purifier, it can really help pull some of these irritants right out of the air environment in your home. So that's one really valuable piece. The other thing that's really helpful and effective is a saline nasal irrigation too. So often called a neti pot. I tend to use mine probably about 3-4 times a week, especially when needed. But most people that are having significant seasonal allergies need to use that in the morning and the evening each day. We're going to take a break. We're talking about seasonal allergies. And when we come back, we're going to start discussing thyroid dysfunction, too. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer for Take Two Healthcare, your guide to better living on WHIO. Thank you, Oliver. We are back. I was talking with Oliver and Dalton at the break, two great producers that I have working with me today, and they gave me a written description of a question from a caller. She did not want to come on the air and talk today, and that's okay. We can still address her problem, and I know the guys took care of her, gave her the office to contact, or the phone number to contact our office in case we can be of help to her. But the long and the short of it is she's suffering from sciatica right now, and this is a common condition. The guys that I was talking to here at the break, they didn't know a lot about it, but in probably more time than they wanted to spend with me, I got them up to speed. And the issue of sciatica can really strike anybody at any time, and it's often difficult to use blood testing to identify what's going on in that particular case. Now, sciatica, if you boil it down to the simplest understanding, is really a pinched nerve. And it's a pinched nerve problem, kind of like when you go outside to water your flowers. If you step on the hose after you've got it turned on and you all of a sudden see the water stop coming through, that's a little bit analogous to what sciatic nerve problems look like, where something is pinching, compressing, pushing upon that nerve, and causing it to dysfunction, meaning there might be some local inflammation. Maybe there's a case of bursitis. There could be some spinal stenosis or a disc herniation. There's a myriad of possibilities as to what caused or contributed to that initial onset of sciatica. But I can tell you within my chiropractic and nutrition and acupuncture practice, of those three disciplines, acupuncture and chiropractic care are going to be the most important in helping deal with sciatic nerve problems. Now, is there a role that nutrition could play? Absolutely. To help decrease chronic inflammation, that's where we're going to get after that piece. But we may need to go in there after a thorough exam and history, potentially some x-ray images. But to get started with adjusting an acupuncture, usually what it takes is just scheduling a 20 to 30 minute consult with me at the office. And then we go from there. We'll assemble a treatment plan. We'll talk through the pros and cons, and we'll pick the right path to travel down. But typically sciatic nerve pain can be improved within just a couple of weeks. And I know it's a painful condition. Everybody that has sciatica wishes they were better yesterday, but that's just not quite the practical application. So if you're suffering from sciatic nerve pain out there and you need a good chiropractic acupuncturist, feel free to give us a call. We'll be happy to help. Now, on the topic of acupuncture, just to kind of quickly dive back into my allergy discussion, acupuncture has also shown some very good evidence of benefiting those with allergic rhinitis, so seasonal allergies. This is the time of year that seasonal allergies are striking in the Miami Valley, or what some affectionately call us here, Sinus Valley. So there's a number of national publications that give reference to evaluation of studies suggesting acupuncture may be very helpful for this particular condition. So for someone looking for a non-drug adjunct, that may be a reasonable avenue to explore with a qualified practitioner. I am board certified in chiropractic acupuncture. I have been since 2009. So quick math says that's 17 years ago. And I continue to learn more each year. We're required to take a certain amount of hours, but I love studying and learning about acupuncture. So I take an average of about 20 to 50 hours every couple years on acupuncture to stay up to snuff on all the latest and greatest treatments and options out there. So acupuncture is a very fantastic art and science to practice. There are many scientific rootings of acupuncture, but it is an age-old technique, 7,000-year history behind acupuncture. So that tells me that there's a lot of validity, a lot of really functional tie-ins to what people are dealing with today. And if it didn't have validity and function in today's medical healthcare paradigm, it would have faded out long ago. 7,000 years is a long time to stay in vogue for something that isn't effective. So give that some thought and consideration next time you read an article about acupuncture. I know we're cruising up on another break here. I am going to talk about thyroid on the other side of this. And I had another question from a friend last night. She wants to know about timing to take your vitamins. We're going to cover that on the other side of the break. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer on AM 1290, News 95.7 WHIO. And Oliver and Aerosmith bringing me back to you right now. Here we go, folks. Buckle up. It's thyroid time. Thyroid dysfunction, why so many people miss it? I saw it two or three times in my office just this week. That's Monday through Friday. That's an average of just under one per day. So let's shift into talking about thyroid health. For those of you who don't know, from an anatomical perspective, this thyroid gland we speak about is a small butterfly-shaped gland in the front of the neck, but its influence in the body is huge. Thyroid hormones regulate metabolism, our energy use in the body, our temperature control, valve and functions, heart function, and the normal function of many organs and tissues throughout the body as a whole. Constipation can be a thyroid dysfunction signal, hair loss. There are so many signs and symptoms that could be tied directly back to thyroid dysfunction. So when that thyroid hormone production becomes too low or too high, the effects can show up almost everywhere. When thyroid hormone is too low, that's known as hypothyroidism, so low. When thyroid hormone is too high, that's called hyperthyroidism. And the reason thyroid issues can be so confusing is that the symptoms may creep in gradually and even show overlap with other conditions or simply get blamed on lifestyle. So sleep and allergies and hormone dysfunction can kind of all show up under that little heading category of thyroid problems. Hypothyroidism often shows up in the following ways. It can lead to the findings of fatigue, feeling cold, having dry skin, as I mentioned earlier, constipation, low mood, even forgetfulness, slower thinking times, gaining weight, thinning of your hair, slower or lower heart rate, or even changes in menstruation and fertility issues for the females in our society. The National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive, as well as Kidney Diseases, and the American Thyroid Association both emphasize that symptoms can develop slowly and that a blood test is needed to diagnose properly, which of course makes sense as to why I'm talking about this, because we are some of the area experts in blood testing. And when I'm talking about blood testing, I'm not talking about using just the TSH marker to sum up the whole function of this gland. And I saw that at least two times in my practice this week, in terms of patients came in to me with a copy of their blood work, even from a couple weeks ago at their medical appointments, and said, "Doc, I want you to look at this. They told me my TSH is really high and they want to start me right away on medication." And I looked at the numbers and I said back to the patient, "Well, where's the rest of the blood testing? Where's the rest of the panel?" Because if the astute physician orders the testing properly, what's going to happen at the lab is as soon as that TSH number comes back out of the range, then if they've checked the appropriate box on their lab testing orders, what will automatically occur at the lab is as soon as they identify that TSH is out of range, they will automatically measure the T4. It's called TSH with T4 reflex. That's how you order the test. Now, I do it a little differently because I'm going to get several other values included on our thyroid panel as a part of a bigger panel that looks at the whole system of the body too. But in doing that, on the medical side, they often rely just upon the number TSH. And I see a lot of shortcomings there because, for one, TSH is known as thyroid stimulating hormone, which, yes, gives us information about the signal being sent to the thyroid, but doesn't really tell us what the thyroid is actually doing. So if we want to know that, we need to measure T4 levels in the blood. We need to measure T3 levels in the blood. And if we're concerned or have any inclination or indication that there may be an autoimmune component to this case, then we also need to add some specific markers called antibodies. One of those is called thyroid peroxidase. The other is called thyroglobulin antibody. And you don't have to write all this down or remember it now, but you do need to call me on Monday morning and get on my schedule if you have this problem and you haven't been measured appropriately. So those are some of the things to look at when we're talking about proper testing for thyroid, because in my experience from people coming through with their family doctors and their insurance paid blood work, it's not really getting to the root of the problem. Now, even in a case of hyperthyroidism, this tends to look like the body is speeding up. So symptoms can include increased sweating, heat intolerance, a rapid heartbeat, tremors of the hand. What else does that sound like? It sounds like a Parkinsonian condition. So there can be some overlap with healthy thyroid function and even healthy neurological function. Anxiety, nervousness, irritability, tough time sleeping or difficulty sleeping, weight loss despite a normal or increased appetite, frequent bowel movements or diarrhea, hair loss, and even menstrual changes. And in some cases, especially with what I was talking about there with the autoimmune thyroid diseases, there may also be eye symptoms like pain behind the eyes or even bulging of the eyes. That presentation is called exophthalmos. Now, maybe I didn't pronounce it exactly correct. I had some really great pathology teachers in Chicago, but I couldn't always understand exactly the way that the word was meant to be said. But exophthalmos is how I learned how to say that bulging of the eyes related to thyroid dysfunction. We can see that when, if you know what to look for, you can see it before the patient even opens their mouth, because as you're starting to listen to them speak, you're noticing how those eyes are really pressed and pushed forward. And that can be a great indication that the thyroid needs to be tested properly. We're going to try to help Jeff here in Dayton. Now, Jeff, I haven't used this system very often, and Oliver's going to help me here, I think. But I would like to talk to Jeff about kidney stones. Jeff, you're on. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Can you help me understand?
Sure.
What creates a kidney stone and what you do to help dissolve a kidney stone? It's not yet causing pain, but I hear it's going to. I have an 8-millimeter kidney stone going on right now.
Okay. I got you, Jeff. No problem. Thanks for your call. I recognize your voice. I'm glad you called today. But yes, kidney stones are an interesting problem of the metabolic system. And unfortunately, I don't have a great description of a list of nutrients to give you to say these are going to help you dissolve this kidney stone. But what we need to do is make sure that it's not causing any obstruction. So making it difficult to urinate, that's typically one of the first signs, along with high levels of pain. I've heard it said and written in the pathology text that kidney stones are the equivalent pain level to labor and delivery. So I've never been through that process on either side, kidney stones or labor and delivery. But what I understand is a very, very painful process. Now, an 8-millimeter stone is considered to be on the larger side for sure. And I think here are some of the misnomers. Often they try to blame it on calcium intake being too high. In my experience, that really couldn't be further from the truth. A lot of times when we measure people's calcium level in the blood, even with known kidney stones, they are deficient in calcium. And it's not that a calcium supplement put that stone there, but typically it's a problem of metabolism. Maybe we're relying too much on fizzy drinks. So carbonated drinks like soda pop with phosphoric acid, even alcohol drinks that have bubbles, whether that's a sparkling wine or beer, those effervescents that are put into some of the beverages we consume are contributing factors to stones. High caffeine intake is another, and low water intake, or known as dehydration. So those are some of the things that can cause or contribute to the stone forming in the first place. But I've got another little bit of bad news for you too, and that is, if and when you've had kidney stones previous and prior in your lifetime, you are in a higher risk category for those stones to come about again. And so that's where we really can come in and be helpful, is not maybe taking care of the one that's there right now, but helping look towards the future and preventing these future stones from forming. The other misnomer out there about kidney stones that I see all the time from patients is they'll come in on this written description from their doctor saying these are all the foods that you can no longer eat to help you with kidney stones. And many of the emphases there are on oxalates. And I understand the reason behind it, but I think it falls a little flat too in terms of the research and the proving that that's really going to be effective. So if we're going to do a good job for you and for anyone else with kidney stones, I think we need to really get into the nuts and bolts of making sure we have a proper urinalysis done at the lab, making sure we have a good clean blood test on kidney and GI dysfunction, because those kind of go hand in hand in this case. And then really looking at the inflammatory values in the blood too. C-reactive protein, ESR, LDH, creatine kinase, some of the things that we test on our standard panel will give us some clues as not maybe exactly why these stones came about, but better yet, some opportunity on how to treat future stones from forming. Now, this can become an urgent medical emergency, and that occurs if the pathway to get urine excreted through the body is blocked. And that would involve a trip to the urgent care or even the ER department to get a catheterization done so that you can excrete urine. That would be the end stage game in this process. Sometimes, based on the movement of those stones as they start to pass out through the kidney and get blocked up in the ureter, if that stone becomes obstructed, stuck, or gets lodged in that narrow opening of the ureter, then at times the medical intervention becomes what they call shockwave lithotripsy. And that's a treatment where they kind of go in. They can go in surgically, or they can do it externally, where they kind of smack that area of the kidneys with what it's called shockwave lithotripsy. They're banging on that area of the body to try to loosen that stone so that it can pass through normally and naturally. If that doesn't work, they'll sometimes insert a tube right directly into that kidney with a drain coming back out the backside of the back to help facilitate that movement, But oftentimes, in about 85 to 90% of cases, kidney stones are going to pass on their own. But as that's occurring, it can be quite painful. So some options there to deal with the pain and inflammation. Of course, on the conventional over-the-counter side, you've got Advil, Tylenol, ibuprofen, those kind of options. But I like to use curcumin complex. Curcumin complex is a great natural anti-inflammatory that, if taken at a dose of 6 to 8 tablets daily, can really help bring levels of inflammation down so that the pain isn't as high as those kidney stones move through. But your number one best treatment, as your ace in the hole here with this condition, is you've got to get 3 to 4 quarts of water in every day. About 96 to 124 ounces of water would be ideal, because that's going to help start pumping things through the system and potentially just eliminate that stone while you're going to the bathroom.
So I've heard that lemonade helps dissolve it or remove a little bit of it.
Yeah, I've read some of that too, with the citrus component there. I've never seen exactly a good study on that, but I don't think it would hurt to try. Now, if a patient's diabetic or has other problems, then too much lemonade can be detrimental. But in that case, I would probably just start supplementing with a powdered version of vitamin C. I would add 3 to 6,000 milligrams of powdered vitamin C into those water jugs that you're going to be drinking throughout the day. That'll get you more bang for your buck than a quart full of lemonade will, and keep your sugars down too. But yes, I have read some of that. I don't know if it's really proven in the literature, but it is out there as a common thought.
Outstanding.
Hey, very Jeff, good. Thank you for your call, man. Appreciate it so much.
Thank you.
You bet. Fantastic. Yeah, Jeff. Hopefully that really helps him. But kidney stones are a real bugger, because it's not often easily understood as to why and how they get there in the first place. I know. I just went through the list, but they always blame it on calcium. That's a dangerous word to use, right? But I see it often blamed on calcium intake, either being too high or too low. I've seen it blamed on just dietary imbalances. And certainly there's people out there drinking way too much caffeine, way too much soda pop, way too much alcohol. And we know these are contributing factors. So if you look at the top reasons for kidney stone formation, in some type of order, you're going to see cigarette smoke, alcohol and soda intake, or calcium imbalances. Now, it's fairly rare in medicine that calcium imbalance is actually occurring on a pathological level. For those people, they have what's called hyper or hypoparathyroidism. There is a little gland. We were talking about thyroid function today. It's not thyroid, but there's a small gland behind that called the parathyroid. And that parathyroid has one job and one job only, and it is simply to help regulate calcium levels in the blood. Now, I've been working in clinical nutrition for 20 years, and in those 20 years, I've probably seen 2 cases of actual hyperparathyroidism. So there can't be that many people with kidney stones out there that are really on the hyperparathyroidism scale. And there's some specific blood testing to identify that. You can look at calcitonin levels. You can look at different hormone levels related to the hyperparathyroid activity. ACTH is another one. So there are some great blood tests out there that can help us kind of cut through the guesswork there. But kidney stones are a really tough condition to manage while they're actively occurring, other than to help make sure that the patient stays comfortable while they're fighting it off. So Oliver's giving me that look. That means we got to take a break. You're listening to Dr. Andrew Dyer on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO. And we are back. Thank you, Oliver. We are ready to roll for the last few minutes here together today. Just want to remind you, for those patients of ours that are listening out there, in the month of May, we do run a 10% off thermography during May. But really what that means is you'll get a reminder card from us in the mail that will tell you you're due for your follow-up testing, whether that's from a blood testing perspective, thermography, hair tests, urine, stool, all the diagnostic testing that we order on patients. We like to use follow-up time within sometimes 3 to 6 months, sometimes 6 to 12 months, to make sure that we're staying, quote unquote, abreast on your changes. And that's no pun intended for thermography, but that is a way to monitor breast health. And there are then blood tests that we can utilize to help really give a full check on where these patients are in terms of their cancer risks. So if that's something you're looking to do, give our office a call. There's more information on our website too at take2healthcare.com. Let's tie in our two topics of the day, seasonal allergies and thyroid support. So let's bring them together. Just to finish off here, if you're dealing with seasonal allergies, your natural support plan may include reducing pollen exposure, using a mask when appropriate, but cleaning the air in your bedroom or workspace, rinsing off after outdoor exposure, and even potentially considering that saline near nasal irrigation or that neti pot use. When done with safe, clean, healthy water, becomes a really nice, low-drama, high-value intervention to keep you on the straight and narrow, keep you healthy, and keep you breathing properly so that you can sleep and function with high energy throughout your day. And if you're concerned about thyroid dysfunction, the first move really should be proper evaluation, not just random supplementation. Now, of course, I'm a big supplement guy. I take a lot of supplements myself every day and certainly recommend them to my patients when appropriate. But I almost always get the benefit of laboratory testing first before we put patients on any kind of supplementation. So traveling down that route of thyroid dysfunction, we often hear about products with biotin in them that can sometimes skew laboratory results. So 1 to 2 days without biotin prior to testing does give a little bit of a cleaner assessment. And avoiding the temptation to mega dose on iodine or selenium just because you saw quote unquote thyroid support on the label. And if you've ever been diagnosed with hypo or hyper, recognize that nutrition is meant to be a support, not a substitute for things that you might need from a standard medicine approach. But for both of these conditions, there are foundational habits that can help the body in any healing process. So consistent sleep, hydration, a steady nourishing diet, manageable movement, and paying attention to patterns instead of waiting until you feel terrible. So we want to continue to use food and natural tools to support the body, but we need to use testing and evidence to guide the plan. Seasonal allergies often respond well to these practical approaches to control exposures and support healthy symptom removal. So there's a product that we use called Natural Dehist, and this is not an advertisement for a product per se, but if you're traveling down that seasonal allergy route, you need to know about Natural Dehist. There's some blood testing markers we can run to tell us if it'll be helpful for you, but that becomes a great alternative option instead of having to take a Sudafed or Claritin or some other antihistamine every day, which can cause cloudy thinking and some of these same problems that the seasonal allergies cause. I want to thank you for listening today. I want to give a shout out to both my great producers this morning, Dalton and Oliver, and had a great time. Be back with you next week, but you'll be hearing one of us from Take Two Healthcare next Saturday at 11 a.m. Thanks for joining us today on AM 1290 and News 95.7 WHIO.